Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, welcome back, Justin. It's been a little while. We had you on once or twice before, learned about some various cuts and things to do. And that kind of fits into the project you're doing right now with Harvesting Nature, with a project you guys got going on. So lots of series and subscribing to your email has been very informative, and there's a lot of interesting stuff there. So thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on. Definitely excited to talk about some cooking as always, and eating, because I don't know if those can't see me, but you can hear the passion and love for food in my voice. I think it's good, and I'm glad you reached out to chat about the topic. And like you mentioned, we sort of like spun up this project of looking on the Wild Fish and Game podcast of like cooking by cuts, and specifically how you can use individual cuts more specifically, I guess, when it comes to like recipes and sort of looking at it from a very approach.
And we're dealing with a couple of interruptions, as that's life. That is part of this time of the year. And I'm not going to lie, I was just really annoyed a minute ago. My wife's supposed to be home by 6. I'm trying very hard to be understanding. She didn't get home till 7:15. And it went from, okay, I can bust out 2 episodes tonight, I'll be good, to struggling to show up for my own interview at 7. So trying to be present as much as possible and understanding is can be difficult sometimes. And we, in order to set things up to be gone for the next, I don't know how many weeks, it's or just gone on and off, this is a crucial thing to just take care of life. And it's going to be, I was just holding my 1-year-old a little bit ago and thinking, I know he's not going to want to sit on my lap here in a little bit. It'll be weird after a few years anyway. So while he's a little baby, I want to hold on to him, and I got to cherish these moments.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fine balancing act, man, that comes with it, especially family, chasing a passion and producing content, you know, editorial, video, podcast, whatever. Like, it's always a good balance.
Yeah. I had my wife on last night. I had to, she's never listened to a single episode I've done. She doesn't hunt. It was all about, I don't know what my episode title is going to be yet. It's like, staying married during hunting season or something. Ooh. Like that. She came on to just talk about, she rated me how I am now versus 10 years ago when we first were married, on setting things up for the season, what she likes, and how I can be gone and be okay with it. And I'm not even a guy that's gone for a whole month of September. I'm gone with 2 weeks here and then a few days here, a few days there. So, sure. But yeah, that was a great conversation. I asked her in the end, like, why don't you just make me stop doing this? And it was nice to hear her say, I would never do that. This is too important to you. This is what you do. It is a healthy hobby activity. If you were sitting on the couch watching sports and that consumed your life in the same way, then yeah, we'd probably have a different conversation. But so it was a kind of a That's cool awesome. One.
Yeah.
But anyway, another cool episode title, Brazen and Bross. I was inspired and thought none other than I need to talk to Justin about this little project. I was cooking up some ribs the other day and then also some shanks, shredded up a whole bunch of shanks for some shredded meat. That's some good camp food here coming up. And then making tacos out of it. And then I was also cooking up some ribs and I had all this leftover stuff. So I didn't know what I should be doing with that. But first off, just with braising techniques, braising is not a term I grew up with. I just slow cooking mm-hmm. is the term that I'm used to. So just what are some of those different methods that we can just wrap our head around versus the tools and things that we're using for this braising method?
So I think when you think about braising, like you mentioned, the first thing that comes to mind is probably a lot of us grew up with our parents or grandparents with the crock pot or slow cooker on the countertop and, you know, various cuts of meat would go into it and some liquid and vegetables or whatever. That in its basic sense is what braising is. And so you've got several different types of braising. If you want to go back into like dig in the culinary world a little bit, you have quick braising and I guess it would be slow and fast braising or quick and fast braising, whichever one you want to call it. But you're going to use the quick braising for like things that are leaner, like birds, vegetables, fish, things like that. And then your slower, longer braises are going to be your tough cuts of meat that you need to really get to a good temperature to break down those tendons and collagen and all that stuff to come down and be tender. And the basic elements of a braise include like your cut of meat and a liquid, and you're using a combination of like a moist and a dry heat to prepare it. The moisture in the braise itself prevents the meat from drying out as you sort of like steam it and it falls apart. Traditionally developed in French cooking to cook the less than favorable cuts of meat that the majority of the population would end up eating. As I mentioned to you earlier, like for wild game, it is probably the number one preparation method that you could ever choose. Is if you don't know what a cut of meat is, you could throw it into a pot, prepare it braised, and you're generally going to get a good cut. You're going to get a good dish. So I would say that. Outside of that, you've got, as I mentioned, like your slow cookers. So those are your crock pots where you're essentially controlling the heat in either like a medium temperature a high temperature or a low temperature. And you're just letting it go for whatever amount of time that you'd prescribed. On the other side of it, inside the oven, which you hear people use like Dutch ovens, they'll have like those enamel cast iron pots, like the Le Creuset, things like that, that you cook in, or you can do it on the stovetop as well. I've done all of them different ways of braised in the smoker, in the grill. Really, it doesn't matter what vessel you're using to cook in. It's that technique of like the meat and the liquid and partially submerging it. You're not boiling it, but you're simmering it in that. And there's other elements you can add to it depending on what you want for flavor.
Okay. And I am going to add this back to my questions on. So, and I think I know what I mean by it now. I had a note of meat prep. So like, if I got a shank, I have some ribs, I have any of those less desirable, let's just say, even though they're not for me less desirable, but we'll just call them less desirable because that's what people do. Mm-hmm. Is there a thing we need to do with that hunk of meat? Like you got a shank and it is like encased in something, or the ribs, they can tend to have a lot of tallow on there. Bear probably a little different than deer tallow is not great at all. But is there any prep that we need to do to those pieces that helps in that process?
I would say, so you hit the nail on the head when you said that, it depends on the type of animal. So like what you're looking at too is like that hard fat versus that soft like visceral fat, or any of the your tendons or your silver skin or anything like that. Those that soft fat on most animals, excluding like deer, elk, things like that, you're not going to want that, because they end up with that like waxy kind of fat, and that's whenever you taste that sort of fat and it kind of like sticks to you, and it's not real satisfying. No. Bear, on the other hand, the fat's very different. It's a different type of fat. It's got a different feel, mouthfeel to it. So you could typically be okay leaving that in. But really, you can leave the majority of the stuff on as far as like tendons and silver skin and stuff, because what's going to happen is you're going to have all that stuff is going to go basically, it's going to get turned into from collagen to gelatin. So we lump all this stuff up in there, in your like tendons and connective tissue and stuff. And so what happens is that about at 160 degrees on up to 180 degrees as it's cooking, that collagen starts to melt, and that melts and turns into gelatin. Mm-hmm. And that's that, like when you get a dish that's got that real like lip smacking, like that, like it just feels great when you eat it as well, as odd as that sounds. That's what you're getting. You're getting that like really pleasing gelatin. And when you described to me earlier kind of what was in your braising liquid, and you had like those three layers in that middle, you have that like kind of jiggly bit of gelatin there. That's what all that is. That's that rendered down connective tissue. And you want that. It's adding great flavor to your stocks, to your broths, and to your braising liquids.
Okay. So then what do you all include in, let's just go with a pot, just general, whether it's crock pot, Dutch oven, whatever, however a method, like you said, it doesn't really matter. So like, what are you all including in some of those? And I know if we're making recipe versus different recipes, it's all going to change, but let's just say we want to make, a good broth, let's just start with like a good broth, and we're going to use some bones. We're going to cut those up. And how much? So let's start with that. And then let's start with an actual food product. Like how much of that liquid, you said about cover halfway or so. That's something I've messed with, is the liquid level has been something I've messed around with. And I'm not sure what the correct or the best way to do that is quite yet.
I mean, there's probably an exact science to it. The easiest way is that you don't want to fully submerge it. Like I mentioned earlier, you're not going to boil the meat in the liquid. Mm-hmm. You want it to partially be, I generally go about halfway, you know, with my liquid. And then it too depends on like how long you're cooking it and, you know, how you're preparing it, because you don't want that liquid to dry up. So sometimes you got to go back in and add a little bit more liquid to it, which is okay. That's why I think cooking in the slow cooker is probably super easy if you're going to start braising, is a way to go, because you can set either low or you're high. And it's generally like, well, if I'm going to cook, you know, a 2 or 3 pound piece of meat on low, I may be cooking it for 8 hours. If I'm cooking it on high, I may be cooking it for 4. And really you're looking for those internal temperatures, to reach a certain level, but you can kind of play with that, like guesstimation, I guess, but sure. Keep an eye on the liquid levels, probably one of your biggest things, but yeah, that halfway is a good mark.
So let me clarify one of my questions in that big mess of questions. Yeah. You got to go make a bone broth right now upstairs. You got a bunch of hunks of bone. What else goes in there?
Ooh, you mean just walk through the whole process? Like I can see it. Sure. All right. So let's say I got, you know, a bunch of bones from, you know, say we cut all the meat off the front shoulder, maybe off the hind quarter of a big mule deer, right? So I've got all these bones now lying here. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to rub them down with oil. I'm going to salt and pepper them, and I'm going to put them in the oven. It probably like 350, 400, and I'm going to roast them. And I'm going to roast them until they get nice and golden brown. because what that is that's adding like a cool caramelization, a lot of good flavors coming off of those that I'm going to then put into my stock. And so then I'm just going to take, once I've got those bones ready to go, I'm going to throw them, fill them up with my pot, however big my pot is, as many as I can get in there. The more the merrier. And I generally like to do, also when I roast in there, you can put onion in there with them. You can put carrots in there. You can put celery, garlic, any of those like aromatics you can put in there with them. And you can roast those lightly too, because it's going to accentuate the flavor. Or you can just put them straight in the pot and cook them. Just fill it up with however much water you're comfortable with holding in that pot, and you're going to just let it go with all those things in there. I typically don't season it with salt or pepper or any of that stuff until the end. That way I can see what the final taste is going to be and kind of like accentuate that flavor profile. But too, like thyme, rosemary, bay leaf, any of those stuff you can put in there for like flavorings.
How do you know about like the potency of it, or the how condensed you made it?
So like as far as reducing it down,
like how I'm trying, like the few times I've made it, I ended with a product was like, is this super watered down, or is this very, is this stronger broth? So how do you know you have a good consistency there of, and not just a lot of water with a little bit of flavor in it?
I generally will go however much water I have, I'll reduce it by half. And I just plan for that. So if I've, you know, say I put a gallon or 2 gallons of water in this big pot, I have a big, huge pot I use. Mm-hmm. I'll just let it top off, let it boil down and reduce down until it's about halfway down from wherever I started. And I know generally by then I've got a good base of flavor. You can let it go further. And you can, you know, you get some of these like super concentrated stocks where people have like, they'll put them in like ice cube trays and freeze them. And they'll say like, oh, I'll take 3 ice cubes out and I'll add, you know, 4 cups of water. And that makes my soup base. I don't really mess with that. I just make the stock at about half of what I want. And then I just put them in generally mason jars and put them in the freezer.
Yeah. And since you've got that so loaded up with bones and whatever else that's in there, then you know with that water, just half of that water, and you're going to have a decent product.
So, oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So if we had just some shanks and we're going to have make some shredded meat that we'll season later, same process. What are you throwing in there to later make some shredded meat tacos or pulled whatever that you're going to season later? But the whole point of it right now is just to get it soft and shredded. What do you want to throw into a pot then?
Yep. So probably what I'm going to do is that I'm not going to roast the shanks. You can, but I want to, whatever pot I'm using, excluding like a crock pot type deal, I want to sear the shanks in that pot, and I want to create that brown bit on the bottom of the pot. That's called fond, F-O-N-D. And that's adding a lot of really good flavor and complexity into your meat as it's cooking as a whole. So I would sear them off. I would then take everything out. And if I had onion or whatever, I would probably cook and do that in there. Onion, garlic, like those aromatics I mentioned earlier, put those in there too. Then I would put either a stock, if I had it, I would put the stock in there as my liquid to begin the braising, put the shanks back in there, do that halfway mark. I would either do stock or a prior liquid I had from braising, because I will save my braising liquid too, as well from previous braises if I don't go crazy with the flavors. Or if you don't have any, you can just use straight water, and basically you're creating this braising liquid now. And then I would just begin the cooking process for it. So generally you're going to bring it up to a simmer and then reduce the heat down and cover it and let it continue to cook until you're getting, you know, you're looking for that 160 to 180 temp, but with shanks, it's really easy. Like you can start to play with it with a fork and like, is this shreddable? Is this like where I want? Cause you can certainly have it on the little more chewy bitey end where you're like chopping it, or you can have it on like the pulled shredded end of where it is. So the key is you can't bring that temperature up too high too quickly. It's got to be like a slow, gradual process to get the internal temperature of that meat up. Otherwise, you'll end up with a very tough cut. And with shanks, you got to make sure it hits that like 160 to 180, and you allow time for that collagen to melt. And I think a lot of people that dislike shanks don't cook them long enough because they're afraid to overcook them.
Yeah. I kind of judge it by that ball of, or that meat spread out, and it just like, balls up and starts to separate off of there. It's like, okay, and then the tendons look like a giant loogie. And so it's like, there we go. I think we got it.
That's what you want.
Good. So it sounds like you have maybe a preferred pot for doing this in, and it doesn't sound like it is a crock pot.
So I have done things. I do them all different ways. I do them in the crock pot. Sorry. Hold on one second, please.
No problem.
No, I can't.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
There we go.
So to go back to your question, I've done it different ways. So I do things in the crock pot. Like if it's a time thing, or just it won't work out for me to sort of tend to pot. Like the biggest thing is probably taking like roasts and putting them in the crock pot overnight, knowing that in the morning I'm going to wake up and be able to have my lunch or whatever for work. But if I got time over the weekend, that's a different story. So I do have big stock pots, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 gallon stock pots that I use to make stock with. And I take, as I break down my animals, all of them that I can, I take and I keep the bones. I just freeze them. It's another section of my freezer that I just have stock bones. And when I run out of stock in the freezer that's already made, that I make, I just go and pull more bones, thaw them out, roast them, create a stock, and just refill the jars. But as far as like braising, like shanks and other cuts and stuff like that, I do prefer to do it in like a Dutch oven.
Yeah.
I think the Dutch oven just adds a lot of, they're good for like, I won't say cast iron is great for distributing heat, but it's good for holding heat and like having some sort of a consistency. Plus it's just like, it feels right.
Yeah.
So just do it in the cast iron.
And I suppose on that, you can create that fond, F-O-N-D,
yep.
Correct?
Yep.
And that's just essentially a little almost burnt layer, just like your eggs on a crappy pan.
Yeah. You're looking for that. So you're getting the protein and stuff that's coming off the meat. You're creating that Maillard reaction. That's what gives you that caramelization on the meat that everybody likes. So you get that on the bottom of the pan and whatever brown spices and different bits. And then when you pour your liquid in there, you're doing what's called deglazing that pan. And so that bit that's stuck on the bottom, you take like your wooden spoon or spatula or whatever. I wouldn't use metal, but you like scrape it and kind of free it from the bottom. And that then becomes part of your braising liquid. And that then becomes part of the flavoring for your meat. So
cool.
You definitely, in a Dutch oven, you're getting that in its like best form.
Yeah. I love little tips like that, because it makes you go from like, I just made a little food, to I know what I'm doing in the kitchen. that's you graduate up from middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what about, so we were getting into a little bit of that timing with this. How do you, I didn't know if people really are afraid of going too far with that. Like, what is, how do you judge that timing on some of the, like your stock with your bones versus your meat? And I guess maybe that's just temperature wise.
Yeah. So stock is going to be a little different. Like, you can just like crank the heat and let it roll. I mean, you're going to get it up to a good boil.
Till you're and then, at the level.
Yeah. And then you can reduce the heat some and then let it just simmer. But you don't have to worry about as much as that heat. I would say more so with your braising of actual cuts of meat, you're going to need to pay attention to your temperature more closely and that time duration. Time, not as much temperature. So generally after like the 2 to 3 hour mark, like I'm checking to see like, what's the consistency of the meat? Is it pulling apart? I'm going to throw a thermometer in there. I will tell you, I probably said this on the last time I was on, but if you don't have a meat thermometer, everybody out there, get a meat thermometer, learn the temps of whatever you like to cook your meat in, because temperature, especially with wild game, because it's so unforgiving from going from something that's like delicious and moist and tasty to like this dry shoe leather in just a matter of like 30 minutes. And so if you're not minding that temperature, then you're going to risk that. But I have overbraised things before to where like, yeah, it's really pull apart and shreddable and delicious, but it just lacks that, like that lip smacking moisture content that I want there. I will say with braising is that if you're concerned that you don't have enough fat in your cut of meat, you can add fat in. So you could add, you know, pork fat, you can add like bacon is an easy one to do. If you saute bacon a little bit in the pan before and like leave the chunks in there, and like as it braises, you're adding that fat back in. That's pretty, it's a traditional technique. You've got like larding and barding of the meat that adds fat into it. So probably going to mix up the ones. One is essentially like taking the fat and wrapping it around. So you think like bacon wrapped anything, or like caul fat wrapped anything. And then larding is where you're like mixing the fat back in. So you may be like weaving it into the actual meat using like a larding needle. So those are some advanced techniques if you're looking for it. But as simple as like putting something that you know that has fat in there, that's not going to be that like bad waxy fat, but putting that in there too, that's going to add to your braising liquid as well.
That makes a lot of sense. I believe it or not, I didn't grow up really enjoying a lot of meat. It seems like it was a little overcooked, or it was like our roasts were dry. You had to dip them in a lot of ketchup to get them down. Just that drier. It was a lot of beef, and just that drier meat. And so you didn't get that lip smacking like you're saying. I think that's a good tip, just adding some fat into it. I never even thought about that. That's great. I suppose it's just, you got a hunk of, I got some fat right in the freezer from some pork fat for that you mix in with your burger. Pull out a little bit of that every once in a while. Or would you use like some bear grease to that? Is that a,
you could, I mean, I don't know, the fact if it's already rendered out, I may be cautious of it. Like I would probably want it added in so it could kind of render while it's cooking.
Okay. That makes sense. I guess that's a whole different question. What is the difference of that product? Something that's rendered out versus that fat. And
that's a good question. I think so, like rendered out, you're going to think more of like a refined oil. So like something that's going to be used for high temp, like searing cooking or something like that. But otherwise, if you're mixing it like in a sausage, like the easiest way I think of is like sausage, like you're adding moisture to it and you're allowing it to cook and it kind of like mixes in. So easy way to think about it. So you've got, we'll choose whatever oil, grapeseed oil, and you take and you rub your steak with grapeseed oil and you cook it. Is that grapeseed oil going to add moisture to your steak? No, it's mainly there to help with that Maillard reaction to brown those proteins.
Sure.
But if you're like taking, well, you could say steak or a burger, right? Or if you're taking that unrendered fat and you're mixing it into your burger meat and then you're cooking that burger, your burger is becoming more moist because it's like rendering out into the meat.
That makes sense. And I suppose the fat, the rendered oil or fat, whatever it is it's just separated from some of the other parts. Mm-hmm. You have the crackling pieces and all the that other stuff. So you've separated and you only have a small product of it, and the other product you went elsewhere.
Yep.
So, well, very good. Bross. So we got let's talk about this jar of stuff that we have. And is when you render down your bone broth, is that similar to that gelatin stuff, or is that just pretty liquidy, like your beef chicken broth you buy at the store, where it's nice and liquidy, filter it or not, you throw it in your mason jar and pull and let it cool down. Is that pretty liquidy yet, I'm assuming?
So I typically like, so when you look at stocks and broths are almost the same exact thing. Really, you're looking at cooking time, and stocks typically don't contain salt. Like I mentioned, you add it in later kind of as your flavoring.
Yeah.
So stocks you can typically let go for like a long time. Like we mentioned, like reducing it down, getting super concentrated broth can be something that's cooked very quick, that's very light in its flavoring. And I would say on the clarity piece and the filtering, I typically do like a double filter on both broths and stocks. And what that means, so I may pull everything out that I can with my tongs, and then I may take like a mesh sleeve and put everything through that. So maybe like window screen size, right? And then I've got like a tea filter. So you put loose leaf tea in it. It's metal, and it's got smaller holes. So then I'll pass it through that again. So then you're getting the bulk of everything out. Some people take it steps further and will use coffee filters, or they'll use cheesecloths or dish towels or whatever to like pull out all that sediment, so they're getting their broth like as clear as possible. There's also ways to use like egg whites to float on the top of it, and like that sediment will cook into the egg white, and you scoop the egg white out. Like then you get into like consommes and like very clear liquids versus like we're talking pretty rustic stocks here, which, you know, yeah, contain like the gelatin and the sediment and all those tasty bits in there. That's all fine. Yeah. It really comes down to personal preference.
Yeah. So let's break some of that more rustic stuff down. I did not filter some of my stuff from cooking up those ribs and those shanks, just kept it. And I was in a hurry. It's like straight out of the crock pot, right into the jar.
Yeah.
And it's in the fridge right now with a layer of solidified grease at the top, or fat at the top. And then there's that layer of the gelatin stuff, and then the thick stuff down at the bottom. What can we break down those different things and what?
Sure. So that like your stuff at the top, that like hard fat layer, that's going to be like literally what that is. That's your fat that's coming off. And what kind of animal was it?
That one, I think I had deer and bear in that same one.
Nice.
No, I take that back. That mostly was, some elk and deer shanks is what that was.
Okay. Elk and deer. So I would probably scoop that bit. If it's like white, hard fat, I'd probably scoop that off and get rid of it. And really what you want to keep out of there is that gelatinous bit, because that's your collagen that's rendered down into gelatin now. So that's your sinew, your silver skin, your connective tissue, all that stuff from those shakes. That's like gold. That's what you want. And then that sediment and bottom, that's just like all the bits of, all the bits of like little pieces of meat and everything that sort of like come off. That's all stuff. It's fine. I know several people that will take that, and I would classify that as your braising liquid. People will take and just continue to use that braising liquid. They'll have like a jar of braising liquid that lives in their freezer or refrigerator or whatever. And next time they braise something, they pull it out and they dump it in there, and they're like, oh, I need a little bit more water, a little bit more stock, so they add to it to bring up the liquid level. But they just continually reusing that because you're just imparting more flavor. So like a seasoned cast iron pan, you want to think about it that way,
or a sourdough starter.
There you go.
Well, that's good to know, because how, and then you said you put it in your freezer. What's your shelf life in the fridge with a jar of that stuff?
I would say in the fridge, like, you've got a couple months or so, out of it. I would probably keep it in the freezer. Then you're going to extend it a year or two if you wanted to keep using it. But I know guys that have been using the same braising liquid for a year, just like in the fridge. So they'll use it, put it back. So,
And then, give me something I'm going to cook up and maybe using that. I guess even just a recipe I made just a little bit ago, my wife sent me a thing, say, here you go, make this. And it had a little bit of broth in it, just a cup of broth in it. Are you taking just a scoop of that gelatin stuff in there and just throwing it in there and letting it cook, or what's your methods of utilizing that jar of
goodness? you could 100% do that. So essentially, like, what you have in that like gelatin and sedimentary liquid is that you've got like a concentrated stock. So just exactly what you're saying is, like, what I would probably do is like take a tablespoon of that and like add into whatever, you know, say a cup or two. If it called for a cup or two of stock, I would take a tablespoon or two, depending on what it called for.
Throw that in there. Concentrated.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you could use the whole thing, just understand that you're going to get like a massive amount of flavor. So like I would play with it. Like it's already cooked. So, I mean, you could take a tablespoon, put it in a cup of like hot water, and then taste it with a spoon and be like, is this too much, and thin it out. Like you can play with it however you'd like, but I think that's a great approach to it.
Yeah, it's because it's just, don't know, you look at blocks of little bouillon cubes, and then you look at that stuff, and you look at some your cardboard things, a stock, and it's just like, consistency wise, like how concentrated is this? So that's a homemade product that I didn't you just don't know what that is, so it makes a lot of sense.
I just like, personal preference, like give it a taste, you know, like, oh, this isn't too much, maybe not a tablespoon, maybe start with a teaspoon and work your way up, like whatever you want to do, just to give it a go. And then what was I going to say? Here's a big thing I tell people too, with like stocks and broths and even creating concentrates and like using those, because people are like, what do you use them for? Like, I'm not going to make, you know, 20 gallons of soup this year, or maybe I am, but I'm like, your starches, right? So your rice, your potatoes, your pasta, you're making sauces with it. You can do all that stuff. Like, you could take your rice, and instead of just using plain water, if you're going to serve like an elk, you know, elk, whatever, cook your rice in elk stock, and it's just going to add to the flavor, and it's going to balance out the meal.
That's interesting. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Instead of just some boring old white rice, you have some serious flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
What about gravies? You ever made a great? I had a buddy tell me, he's like, "Oh yeah, this stuff makes the best gravy." It's like warming it up and putting some flour in it and a little milk or what?
Yeah, I would typically like go with, you know, traditional methods of making gravy with it. You can make sauce from stocks and stuff like that. I forget which. I'm bad on my like traditional mother sauces, on which there's one definitely made with stock, and they all have elements of stock that you can use. Yeah. But as far as like a straight up gravy, I would probably, if you're making a white gravy, I probably wouldn't use it because you're using cream. But like even a brown gravy, like you want those delicious brown bits from like your cooked meat and, you know, the other stuff you're adding in, flour and all that. You could add some stock in there too to give it some good flavors.
Well, to round out this conversation, I want to know, it's days away from September. What do you got lined out?
For me, it's been an interesting year, already as far as like hunting and things like that. So, I drew a September long bear tag, up in Northwest Colorado. So like the Steamboat Springs area, There's like 5 units up there that encompass this tag. So I drew it, for rifle, and then I picked up an Eastern Plains, Colorado Eastern Plains tag. And then I'll probably do an over-the-counter Colorado oak tag because it's my last year in Colorado before we move. And then looking at trying to go down to Florida for some alligator in either October, I think is probably what it's looking like. So
we'll be seeing some alligator recipes, hopefully, on the newsletter.
Hopefully.
I'm hoping someday I need to dig back into all the hog stuff you guys did in the last year. Oh my gosh. So many hog related things that with your time down in Texas to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're still doing them. We still have a camp coming up in December. We're going to be doing another wild pig camp down in Texas. We still got, I think, 6 spots open. And then this will actually hit the books this weekend, is that we're going to be doing a waterfowl camp in Oklahoma.
Awesome.
We're partnering with G&H Decoys, and we're going to be doing a camp there in January. And then we're looking at like a coastal foraging, crabbing, clamming camp in Oregon in the summer, which,
oh man,
just sounds awesome. So
yeah. Where are you headed off to after this year?
I'll head over to DC, Washington DC. So those that don't know, like I'm active duty in the military. And so, I got into graduate school, over in DC. So I'm going to go spend a year at grad school there. But, our community manager, Colin Gruen, just got transferred over there as well. So we're going to explore the East Coast, some hunting. So it should be hunting, fishing, loads of stuff over there. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be a minority, I'm sure, as a hunter in the swamp, they call it.
But yeah, not the first time.
No.
Not the first time I'll be that, but that's gonna be fun.
Well, very good. I'm really excited to try out some of these new techniques. A couple of great things here, because I definitely know that planning for this starts when we put our knife to our animal and what goes out with us and what stays, because a lot of these things are not legal requirement to take. And so I thought we got to hit this quick while people are driving to elk camp or driving across wherever to get excited about those other things and say, suck it up, put it in the game bag and haul it out, because it'll be worth it. So I got to convince a couple of people to do the same. I mean, I we've got a long pack out if we get something, so I'm really looking forward to having some good stuff. But all right, let's plug Harvesting Nature and where we can go to sign up for hog camp or the waterfowl camp or any of those great things or any other projects you got going on you want to share.
Yeah, sure. We operate pretty mainly off our website over at harvestingnature.com. You can also visit our website, as or not our website, our social media. Instagram is probably the biggest page we've got, but you'll see just about everything we're doing there. But everything from wild food focused camps. So if you want to learn how to shoot better or butcher better, or learn how to cook wild pigs or duck or geese or clams and crabs, I guess, coming up, go there. We also have a full line of wild fish and game spices that we developed that are all tailored specifically towards different types of species. So like big game, small game, upland fowl, waterfowl, wild fish, all that. Phenomenal. Made in the USA too. So good stuff. And constantly doing articles and recipes just about every day. And then a couple podcasts we run, very food focused. So
yeah,
that's your lane. You're welcome to come swim in it with us and get nerd out on some delicious wild food stuff.
We'd
love to have you following, supporting.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks again for your patience on rescheduling three times or so. And I'm glad you had a kid issue in the middle of this, because I had my own. But appreciate it again, and I'll get this out the next week. Actually, I'm going to get it scheduled for next week, Tuesday, while I'm out and doing some elk hunting. So that'll play while we're off playing. But appreciate it again. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks, man. But it ain't my ground. This is God's country.